We talked about the components of a computer and the way information flows around inside a computer when you boot the computer up and when you run a word processor, when you print something. And I think that stuff should have been, I hope it was kind of review for you guys, but maybe make you think about stuff that you hadn't explicitly thought about before, because you just kind of click around and take it for granted. And then we also talked about embedded computers, how there are computers embedded in cars and ATM machines and cell phones and all that stuff. But the thing that we talked about the operating system. And that was that control program. Remember when you turned the computer on, first thing it did was load the operating system into memory, then it took over and displayed that window so that you could start giving commands. Remember? So what I want to do is just spend a little time talking about operating systems. So here I put together a presentation for you on operating system. There are no skills involved. I think you already have skill with Windows or with a Macintosh operating system. You know, do things like run programs and delete files and move files around and so forth. And some of you, I'm not sure. Let me ask you that question. How many of you have experience with a command line operating system where you type commands? Okay, so quite a few of you have that experience too. So you know. Oh, by the way, if you just heard me ask that question and you didn't understand what it was, don't worry, we'll get to it. Okie doke. What is a command line operating system? But for now, I assume everybody is familiar with either Windows or the Macintosh or both. So you know the skills of an operating system. And I want to just go through some concepts. I want to talk about what the popular operating systems are, what the functions of an operating system are. There are some of the main functions that they do. We can talk about open source versus proprietary software. That's a topic that goes beyond operating systems, but it comes up here. Operating systems have these little helper programs called device drivers that let the computer interface to the input-output devices that we talked about before. So we'll talk about them a second. And then a final thing, there's a trend or a technology that's becoming really popular now, which is called virtualization of operating systems. And I want you to know what that is, so when you hear the word, you won't be snowed under. Okie doke? That's what we're going to cover. Where does this fit in the class outline? This is in the technology section. Popular operating systems. There are a whole bunch of operating systems, but three of them are popular. Three of them you've probably run into or at least heard of. Have you heard of all these? Windows, OS X, the Macintosh operating system, and Linux? Never heard of Linux? Well, get ready. You're going to hear it. Have you ever used Linux? How many people in the room have used Linux? How many people have never used Linux? How many people have ever used Google? What does Google use for their servers? Linux. So every time you use Google, you're using Linux on their machine, not on your machine, but on the server. And pretty much any, how about Yahoo, or pretty much any of the big services that you guys use, they're typically, their servers are running Linux. So Linux is a big deal, but not so much on the desktop. Anyhow, so those are the three. And remember I said I wanted to talk to you about this idea of proprietary versus open source software. Windows is proprietary. It belongs to Microsoft. Microsoft controls it. When there's going to be a new version, Microsoft puts it out. When there's going to be a fix, you know, they find bugs, Microsoft disseminates the bug fixes. Do they give it to you for free? No, they charge you for it. And if you bought your computer from Dell or Hewlett-Packard, it cost a little more because they had to pay Microsoft to put the operating system there and then turn around and sell it to you. So it's proprietary. It's owned by Microsoft. Same thing with Apple. OS X, if you got a Macintosh, it came with OS X. but Apple owns it, they control it, they decide when there's going to be an OS 11, and so on and so forth. They're the owners of that. Yeah?
I downloaded OpenOffice from Google. What is that considered?
Okay, OpenOffice is not an operating system. What OpenOffice is an open source competitor, if you will, alternative to Microsoft Office. So it's not an operating system, it's an it's a suite of application programs, but that gets us here. What's Linux? It's open source. What does open source mean? That means it doesn't belong to Microsoft or Apple or anybody else. It means this. You see this kind of expression frequently. It means the software is free. It's free as in free beer and free as in free speech. Now, let me tell you what I mean by that. What if I say, hey, you want some free beer? What does that mean? Everybody knows that, right? It means you don't have to pay anything. You get the beer for free. So when you downloaded OpenOffice, how much did you have to pay?
It was free.
It was free, right? If you want to buy Microsoft Word or Microsoft Office, is that free? No. Okay, so there's one difference that separates proprietary and open source software. Free as in free beer. Now, free as in free speech, what they're getting at is this. If you got a copy of Windows on your computer and you didn't like it, you wanted to change something, add a command, invent a new command, could you do that?
No.
No, because Microsoft has the source program, the program. I mean, Windows is just a giant program, but Microsoft keeps that up in Seattle, Washington on the server, and it's top secret and people can't get to it. Same thing with Apple. But how about if you're using Linux and you want to make a change to it? Go for it. Nobody owns it. You can get the program, you can make modifications to it. It's yours to deal with as you will. So that's what they mean when they say free as in free speech. Not only can you get the program for zero money, but you've got the ability to make all the changes and use it the way you want to. Now, it depends on how there are a couple of open source licenses, some of which say, just go for it. It's yours. I don't care what you do with it. Others say, if you make a change, it's incumbent upon you to give it back to the community. If you make an improvement, give it back. And that's the way, like, Linux has been going for many, many years, and that's the way it has evolved. It's gone because one guy, a student, many years ago, I wish I could tell you, I will add a slide telling how, when, but, you know, this is a kid who was an undergraduate student. He wrote the start of Linux. And it's taken off since then, and he's still overseeing Linux, like, many years later. He's not a kid anymore, but it turned out to be a career for him. Actually, I think he calls it Linux because his name is Linus. He pronounces that way. Yeah.
He started the company.
Is this a company? Is Linux a company? No, it's a program sitting on a server somewhere. There is no company. That's the thing. Nobody owns Linux. Nobody owns OpenOffice application suite. All right. So that's the three operating systems, and as I say, one of them is open source, and it's used a lot on servers. So let's switch gears now and talk about, okay, operating system. What does an operating system do? And I've tried to just 1, 2, 3, 4, pick 5 kind of key functions, big picture functions of an operating system. Because, like I say, you've used operating systems for a long time. You've used probably Windows, but you haven't thought about it in a systematic way. So execute user commands, manage files, and so forth. Let's take a look at each of these. Execute user commands. If you think about when you're using Windows, you see this kind of desktop, and you see little things that represent files, right? Your word processing document that you just created, whatever. If you want to give the command to delete it, how do you do it? You press delete? What do you do? If there's an icon for a file, how do you get rid of it? How do you erase the file?
Click and drag, right click.
Okay. How do you do it? There's a file in a folder, I don't want it anymore. You've got a couple of choices. One is what you can right click and a little menu comes up and you select delete. And it says, "You sure you want to delete this?" And you go, "Yeah," and it deletes it. Right? Another thing you can do, that's where I try to draw in this little picture. It kind of doesn't show. You can just take a file and do what? Drag it over to that little trash can icon if it's on your desktop. Do you guys know what I mean by that? And you put it in that little trash can and it goes away, right? So how are you giving commands in that case? You're looking at the screen, kind of a graphical representation of the screen, and you're using your mouse to do things, to delete a file in this case. That is what people call a graphical user interface, and that's what you're all familiar with. You all know Windows, or Macintosh, or both, and that's how it works. You look at a graphical representation of the system, and you click, and you drag, and you mess around just with the mouse pretty much. Once in a while, you have to type. Like if you want to rename a file, you have to type in the new file name. But it's pretty much you're looking at a graphical representation of the system. That's contrasted to the idea of a command line interface. And 4 or 5 of you guys said you've used operating systems with command line interfaces. And with a command line interface, instead of clicking and dragging and so forth, you just get a blank slate, like with just a cursor there blinking, and you type the command saying what you wanted to do. And in this case, I typed del grades.lxxls. What did that do? What does the del command do? What does del sound like? Delete. So that's how you would erase a file if you're using a command line interface. You'd give a keyword like delete, and then the name of the file, and it would disappear. The same as if you drag it to the trash can. And this is a screen from Windows DOS, which is it turns out that you guys, if you haven't done it, you can. There's underneath Windows, you can bring up a command window like this, and you can type commands instead of doing the Windows graphical thing. And you can do all the same stuff. You can delete files. You can rename them. You can move them. You can copy them. Run programs and so forth by typing commands the same way as you do it clicking around in the graphical user interface. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Do you trust me that that's all there? It is. Okay. Some 4 or 5 people stuck up their hand have done it. And I'm not going to expect you to know how to do this, but you should know that this alternative exists. And it turns out, which do you like better? Do you like the idea of having to type commands, or would you rather click and drag and just look at the screen and click and drag? Which do you like better? Think to yourself, which sounds better? I'm used to this click and drag. Would I want to switch to having to type commands? What do you think? What did yourself tell you? You stick with what you got, or you'd be willing to switch? You stick with what you got? All right, I don't know. Yourself was saying something in there like, what's he talking about? Huh? But anyhow, it turns out, which came first, the graphical user interface or command line interfaces? Command lines way preceded them because they're easier. They don't require such a fast computer. It wasn't feasible to do graphical interfaces until, it wasn't really economically feasible in the mass market until 1984. Who brought out the first command or graphical user interface computer that actually made it in the marketplace in 1984? Macintosh, the Apple Macintosh, yeah. Anyhow, so before that, people couldn't afford to do command line graphical interfaces. It took too expensive a computer to keep that screen all updated. That takes a lot of processing. Apple tried one a couple years before the Macintosh called the Lisa. It didn't make it. It was too expensive and too slow. But when the Macintosh came, it caught on. Anywho, command line interface versus graphical user interface. Command line interfaces, though, still very much exist and are very much used. Not so much by desktop users like you guys, but by system administrators, by people running servers and whatnot. Because they can, once you memorize the command, you can be really fast. And also, you can write little programs made out of commands, and you can do a whole bunch of stuff with executing one of those little programs. So there's a lot of this stuff. Command line interfaces are very much alive in the world of servers. Here's just one other example. If you want to run a program, if you want to run Microsoft Word, what do? When you're using Windows and you want to start Word, what do?
Click on the icon.
You click on the icon, or you go to that start menu, you go up and click, right? You've all done that. How do you run a program if it's a command line interface? You just type the name of the program, W-O-R-D, and it runs it. And so on and so forth. And you can see, once you kind of get the hang of a command line interface, a lot of people can go way faster that way than the clicking and dragging and whatnot. Yeah?
Is there a list of those commands somewhere?
Sure. That's cool, man. If you want, I'll give you, like, I also have a handout that I wasn't going to go over it in class, but I can give it to you. But basically, this is what you do. I don't know if you've ever gone to the Start menu. And you click on it, and there's one of the choices is called Command or Run, R-U-N. You click on Run, it brings up a little window like this. You say, what do I want to run? And you type in Command, and then the window opens up. And then if you want to see the list of the commands, you do question mark or H-E-L-P or something, I forget which, and it just lists them out for you. H-E-L-P. Okay. Anyhow, if you want, there's a handout that we won't go over in class on that topic, and I'll send me an email, I'll send you a link to it. Yeah, if anybody wants to mess with command line interface outside of class, send me an email. Okay, does everybody get that distinction? Here's the second function that we spent a long time on. The first function, it accepts the first function we talked about of the operating system is accepts commands from the user. Second one, manage data and program files. If you think about it, all the files on your hard drive, each file has either a program in it or data in it. You know, like Word is a program. A particular document that you create is a data file that was created with it. And when I say manage, you guys know how to do all this stuff. You can create folders and put stuff in folders and move folders and copy folders and take one folder and put it out on a flash drive. So you can move things around. You can delete them, create folders, erase folders, and so forth. You guys know how to do that. When you're doing that, it's the operating system that's doing all that for you. It's keeping track of the files on your disk. On files in your storage. Third function. The operating system allocates CPU time. Remember, the CPU is that little part of the system that actually executes the instructions that make up a program. And when I say allocates its time, well, what do you have to allocate? Stop and think for a second. Can you run more than one program at once? Do you ever, when you're working on your PC, do you have several programs working? Yeah. Okay. So what I've done, I've shown here a little display of the task manager, which you can bring up by going Control-Alt-Delete if you haven't done it. And you can see at this moment, I was running 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, about 11 programs. And the CPU is responsible. You know, there's going to be one that's in that window that's kind of on top, the one that you're currently working with. But the others are all still in memory. And you can quickly click on a different window, and boop, the CPU switches its attention to that program. And even more kind of behind the scenes, let's see, do I have an example here? Yeah, FileZilla. This is a file transfer program. This program might be transferring files, say, from my computer up to a server at the same time I'm doing word processing. So it can really be doing two or more things really, in some sense, at the same time. And the operating system is what keeps track of that. If I'm transferring a file and at the same time I'm working on word processing, there's time to kind of do both. Transfer some file. Oh, the guy just typed a Q. I'll pop that on the screen. You know, I don't type very fast, so there's plenty of time. And the CPU, the operating system, moves the CPU from one task to another very rapidly sometimes, you know, just for a tiny fraction of a second on this task, tiny fraction of a second on that task. So you don't have to worry about that. The CPU kind of take, or the operating system takes care of that for you. And you can see here it's saying, oh, the CPU is only being used 10% of the time, and 3/4 of my physical memory is tied up right now. Yeah, here's an example of this. I was transferring files to another computer, and I was transferring two files at the same time. And at the same time as that was happening, I could have been working on a spreadsheet. And the CPU would say, okay, give this one a little work, give this one a little work, do the spreadsheet, back to the file, back to the spreadsheet, back to the file. It's just popping around like that, and the operating system is in control of that. And that complexity, you don't see that complexity, do you? You just have the feeling, oh, yeah, I'm downloading my email while I'm doing something else. But the operating system is kind of the controlling all that activity. The operating system, in general, I guess the more general way to say it, it manages all the resources of the system. And some of the kinds of things it does is like garbage collection. If you have a program that's running and it takes some memory to do a task, and then it doesn't need that memory anymore, say you're using Word, and then you finish a document, you close the document, the memory that document occupied isn't needed anymore. The operating system gathers it up and makes it available to other programs. It keeps track of memory management. Disk swapping. If you're working on a whole bunch of things at once, maybe memory kind of gets full. What does it do? The operating system says, uh-oh, I'm going to take this stuff out of memory, temporarily put it on the disk to create some space so that things can keep going, and then when I need it, I'll bring it back in. All that's happening behind the scenes, you don't realize it, but the operating system's taking care of all that for you. And there are a lot of others. And you can monitor how things are going, again, by going Control, Alt, Delete, and go Resource Monitor. If you can see these things that I'm displaying. And here's an example of one of those, how you might use one of those displays. I don't know if this is a little hard to read, but what this is saying is, this green line is saying that around 60 or 70 times a second, the operating system is having to move stuff out of memory and on the disk and bring stuff back from the disk into memory. It's doing that kind of back and forth between memory and the disk. Now you can imagine if it's doing that 60 times a second, what happens to your computer? How does it seem to you when you're using the computer if it's kind of moving stuff back and forth between memory 60 times a second? It seems slow. Okay, so you know sometimes your computer seems really slow, right? And that may be what's going on. And if you look at this display and you say, oh, wow, it's doing that moving back and forth between disk and memory, that swapping very frequently, what does that tell you you need to do? You need to either stop some of the stuff you're doing, don't try to do so much at once, or go buy more memory if that's the way you like to work. You don't have enough memory in your computer. I think this was the final one. The final thing that the operating system is responsible for is interfacing with all the devices. Remember, we've got the computer, and we listed tons of input devices and output devices and storage devices, right? The operating system comes from Microsoft in the case of Windows. Who does your keyboard come from? Does it come from Microsoft? Who does your microphone come from? Does Microsoft sell microphones? No. Does Microsoft sell displays? They don't sell any of that input-output stuff. I think they used to sell mice. Maybe they still do. I'm not sure. But not much, okay? Microsoft's not in the business of doing hardware, of doing input-output devices. They provide the operating system. But when you get your computer, they put Windows on there, but do they have a way of knowing at that time that 3 years later you're going to go out and buy a Samson microphone? No. They have no way to know that, do they? So every time you buy a device, an input device, an output device, a storage device, it comes with a little piece of software called a driver. And that driver software is what Microsoft operating system talks to, and then the driver software controls the input-output device. So for every device you've got to have a driver program, and the operating system just keeps track of that. It installs the drivers, and then it uses them once they're installed. Does that make sense? That's the way you can kind of customize the system to your own hardware configuration. So those interface programs are called device drivers. And this is a big one. Keep this one in mind. Do you remember I asked you last time when we were talking about the components, we talked about input devices, output, storage, memory, CPU. And then I asked you, where does the internet fit in that picture? Do you remember that question? Is the internet a storage device, a memory device, a CPU, an input device, or an output device for your computer when you're using the internet, like these computers right now? Is the internet its memory? What is it? Where does the internet fit with respect to this computer right now? Talk to your neighbor about that for a second. Engage with that thought. You got the following choice. What are the choices? Is it memory? Is it the CPU? Is it storage? Is it input? Or output? This is a multiple choice question. So if you had a chance to kind of engage this, both with your neighbors and in your own mind, was she willing to talk to you? Damn. Is the internet a CPU? No, that's the part inside your computer that executes instructions. Is the internet the memory of your computer? No, that's those little chips in there that hold the programs you're currently executing. Is the internet the storage of your computer? Nah, the storage of your computer is that hard drive or the flash drive that you plug in, the place where it stores its programs and its data files that it's currently working on. So what does that leave? Is the internet an input device? Does your computer get input from the internet?
Yes.
Does it? Does your computer get input from the internet? Look at your screen. Where's the stuff on your screen? Where did that come from? Look at the screen right now. Where did the stuff you're looking at come from?
From another server, another computer.
And where was that other computer?
Somewhere else.
Connected to the internet. Okay, everything you guys are looking at right now came through from the internet into your computer. How about if you if you send somebody an email? Where does that email go? It goes off your computer to the internet, right? So the internet is an input-output device. Is it a little teeny one that you can hold in your hand? No. It's a giant worldwide network of millions of computers, right? But from the standpoint of your computer, the internet's just another very useful input-output device. It's both an input device and an output device. So that's where I would put the internet in this picture. And all of that was because I wanted to say the following thing. The little programs that interface with your mouse and your keyboard and your disk drive are called device drivers. And there's different one for every device. The software, the program that interfaces your computer and everybody else's computer to the internet is a pretty complicated suite of programs called TCP/IP. Just, have you heard that word, that set of initials?
Yes.
Have you? Okay. You have or you haven't. Have you heard it now? Yeah, I just told it to you. Okay. And I want you guys to have some understanding of TCP/IP before the class ends. But the thing is, every computer on Earth that's hooked to the Internet has TCP/IP software running in it, and that's how the computer, your computer, is able to talk to the other computers out on the Internet. Make sense? So it's very much analogous. I didn't think of that until I made this slide, but it's very much analogous to device drivers. It's what enables your computer. Now, Microsoft doesn't know which mouse you're going to have. Microsoft doesn't know which keyboard you're going to have. But Microsoft, since Windows 95, has had a pretty good idea that you're going to want to connect to the Internet. So they include TCP/IP with Windows. So anytime you buy a Windows computer, you get TCP/IP. Anytime you buy a Macintosh, you get TCP/IP. It didn't used to be that way. When the Internet was first starting out, if you wanted to use your computer on the Internet, you'd have to download the TCP/IP, the device driver for the Internet, if you will, and install it, and then you could talk to the Internet. Just as if you'd hooked up a new keyboard or a new mouse, you were hooking up the Internet. But at any rate, now TCP/IP just comes with the with Windows. Final kind of a footnote. I wanted to just mention this idea of virtualization because you hear about it a lot, and rightfully so. This is a diagram of a computer's memory. And when we were looking at the before, memory looked just like this one square. There'd be the operating system and a bunch of programs and documents they were working on, like Word and the thing you were writing and the spreadsheet, the data of the spreadsheet, and the operating system. Well, for years on big computers, and now on little desktop computers, people do what's called virtualization. And it's this. Memory's cheap, right? Memory used to cost a lot. When I was your age, memory was really expensive. Now memory is just cheap as dirt. And 2 years from now, is it going to be more expensive or cheaper?
Cheaper.
Is it going to be a little bit cheaper or just way the heck cheaper? Way the heck cheaper, okay? It's going to be just majorly cheaper. But it's already cheap enough that people can start to afford, and it makes sense, economic sense, to do this, where you have one, two, three, more than one operating system running on the same computer, all fitting in memory together, and each completely independent of each other. So it makes one computer seem like it's three computers. And the advantage of this is, if this computer is not so busy, well, this one's doing something. So it's more economical. You end up saving money by doing this, if you can justify it. And right now, you don't see this happening too much on desktop computers, but there's a huge trend to do this on servers. So it's one of the things that's happening today as we speak, this idea of running multiple operating systems at the same time on one computer. Uh-huh.
Just to give it even more capability and speed?
Well, it's just, if one of them is doing one thing and another is doing another thing, it's keeping the hardware busy all the time. If you don't do virtualization, sometimes the server's just sitting there with nothing to do. So this way, it's kind of, if you got two things going on, the load gets distributed better. Like, instead of having two separate computers, maybe you only need one computer to do both of the tasks. And here's an example of it on the desktop. It's not that you don't do virtualization on desktop. It's just that mostly they do it in the server. But if you kind of look carefully at this screen, I don't know how many of you people have messed with Macintoshes, but this is a Macintosh. See the little Macintosh logos down there? You see all those guys? But what's this? This is Windows. So this computer is running Macintosh operating system, Windows operating system, and the user just kind of pops back and forth between the two. Okay, let's just do a quick food for thought question. Here's this display of that app, the monitor that I showed you before. And look, there are no programs running. Zero programs are running. Yet memory is 51% occupied. What's going on? What's taking up 51% of the memory of this computer when I take that picture? The operating system, all right? It's in memory. It's just another program in memory. I hope that I've gotten across to you in conclusion, in summary. You saw what some of the popular operating systems are. I named three of them. Two of them were proprietary, and one of them was open source. We went through five sort of functions of operating system. Remember what they were? Issuing commands, managing resources, so on and so forth. And we talked about device drivers, and I should probably even emphasize the king of the device drivers is TCP/IP, which lets your computer interface to the internet, and then said a couple words at the end about virtualization. And I think that's the end of that presentation.